my name is Francis Pinder, and you are watching or listening to the Salesforce Posse podcast, where I speak to Salesforce industry influencers so we can gain a better understanding of how to excel in a career path from a Salesforce admin or developer to an architect. And in this conversation, I'm going to be talking to Samuel Arora, who is a product manager and architect at Provar, a fantastic testing tool for the Salesforce platform. But I wanted to pick his brains about how you build for quality and how you start pushing the needle to improve outcomes in Salesforce implementation projects. So if you're interested in maximizing release quality, or want to take a look at how you choose a functional testing tool correctly, or even understand what quality is, then you're gonna get a lot of value out of this conversation with Samuel. So without further ado, let's go. So here we have Samuel Arora. Arora, is that correct? I always get names wrong. yeah, on the podcast. You? Brilliant. So how did you get into the Salesforce ecosystem?
Well, it's a bit of a funny story. I was studying at university, and I think it was a three-year degree. It was the third year, and we had some conferences. And a startup from Madrid came. They did a couple of sessions. One was about Google Cloud. Mm-hmm. And the other about Salesforce. Didn't care about Salesforce at all. Google was the name. I wanted to work.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I definitely went to the Google Cloud conference. And that was it. They did like some sort of interview where I tried to explain, I did that and this and that. And that was it. They never contacted me for a while. And then I was on holidays. And they reached out to me, the guys at this startup, and they called me and like, would you be interested in working in the startup, working in Salesforce, like the Salesforce ecosystem? Like, I don't have a clue what Salesforce is. I'm calling on holidays. But I mean, it's Spain. You're a young person. You don't say no to a job.
Exactly.
When unemployment is 50%, you don't say no to a job. So that's it. Like, okay, I'll be starting in a couple of weeks. And it was quite fun. Like when I started, the team, the few people that also joined, they were already 1 week through the training. They were just following one of the Salesforce resources. And there was like a big book of Salesforce where they had everything. And they were going through that. But I figured out there were workbooks. There was a VisualForce workbook and other workbooks. And I started using those, which were much more practical. And in a week, I already caught up and surpassed them because they were going theory.
Brilliant. Yeah, I remember that. So when did you get started? How many years ago in the sales?
I think that must be like 2012.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of like, all you had was like the workbooks, the online manual, and that was it. And the Salesforce courses, you know, which you could spend hideous amounts of money on. And that was it. And maybe some developer forums, I think. That was it. We're here, talking about quality. And so I think kind of it's really important for me as an architect anyway, making sure that what's being envisioned, what the goals of the organization are being delivered, I suppose, through my architectural designs are also being kind of implemented in the organization. But I think maybe the first question to ask is like, what does quality mean to you, I think?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it's not only to me, I think quality means different things to different people. When I think about quality, I can think of the whole life cycle and how different people will think that what they do, there's an aspect of quality. So I think it's easier when we look at something that is not software sometimes. And when you have a watch and you think this watch is quality, like it has good quality, what do you look in it? Is it because it's robust? You can go underwater? Or is it because it just lasts very long? So I think for me, quality is just that something is doing what it's supposed to be doing. Mm. But when it comes to software, for some people, quality means that it never breaks. But for other people that are more interested in the experience of the user, for them, good quality means a good user experience sometimes. Mm. So as a business, it's important to define what do we mean by quality, mm. and how, all the different angles by which you can look at quality, which I think in the end is, well, what does good look like? Mm. And set the benchmark. And then once you know what good looks like, it's like, okay, that is quality that we're striving for. And then anything below that is room for improvement.
Yeah, I think it's I always found, one's done almost. It's the same kind of thing. I remember working in a film post-production company, and it's like it was a very design thing, right? Creating CG graphics and stuff for films. And it's very creative. And it was like, when has it got to that kind of quality bar that you're happy with it? And these designers are just constantly tweaking and twisting and making it even more perfect. And it's like, for them, the bar was when they ran out of money and ran out of time, right? And that was it. That's when you kind of hit that quality level, right? Because you had to ship it. And I remember one film, it was releasing in 2 weeks, and they were still twiggling with it. But so obviously, like DevOps world, everybody's kind of looking at the kind of key kind of ways of improving my DevOps process, kind of quality being kind of core to that. And okay, so there's one thing of kind of understanding from the organization what quality looks like for them, so you know what to focus on. But how do you then kind of understand what the maturity is and what the kind of the process is to maintaining that and setting that, especially if you've come from like a very manual testing kind of organization?
Yeah, that's a whole area in itself. There are different frameworks that try to help people understand the level of maturity. I think it depends on in how many parts are you looking at quality, how are you measuring it. Sometimes it's not well measured. Sometimes it's not tested. So you know what quality looks like. But then once you ship a particular feature and you tick the box, then that's it, that you never look back to see if that's still the case after many changes. It may have to do with automation as well. So without automation, it's just very difficult to scale. And I've seen, I used to work in a consultancy, and quality was always a difficult topic because they pay you by the hour. And that means, well, the thing is, well, if we spend time making sure that everything looks perfect, that is time and money. So you need to sacrifice something. And sometimes you optimize for speed or for the budget that you have, and you have to sacrifice quality. And then the cases come later when they open a case, this is not working as expected. And then you look back to the user story and it was nowhere there. It wasn't on the acceptance criteria. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, well, we never said that this was what quality, good quality meant. So even as a product manager, I find that sometimes that I may not spend too much time on a user story or the acceptance criteria. And then when the team comes back with most of it already done, I realize it's not as good as I thought. Mm. But it's not the team's problem. It's just I didn't specify in detail what good looked like and what... Yeah.
It's that classic picture, isn't it? Is that of that house, and you're kind of building a house, and different people's view, the house looks different. Product owners looking at a 5-story massive mansion kind of thing, whereas the developer is just looking at it as a cottage or something like that.
Yeah. And it happens as well. Like probably in your case, like if you're managing people or you're training junior developers or junior Salesforce admins and they do something and you look at the quality of what they've done, it's not good enough for me, but yeah. I cannot just tell you all the time to come to my standards of quality, because that would mean that you are senior and not junior. Like, you don't have that much to learn. And also, I don't want to micromanage you. So you have to sacrifice quality because the other person has to learn.
Interesting. So it's kind of the levels of quality based on, the levels of experience developing in Salesforce or implementing in Salesforce. So how do you manage that in reality? So obviously you said, like, one of the things for scaling quality and testing is going the kind of automated testing route. So what are the kind of the arguments? Obviously you've got the kind of the scalable argument for automated testing, but what are the others? Because I always find that it's almost like, not dancing with the devil, but you can go down a road where everything is so automated testing, and there's so much kind of engineering there in the automated testing, that when it comes to making small dev changes, which are small on the development side of Salesforce, the impact on the automated testing is huge. And you're almost ending up doing more work supporting the automated testing than you are actually doing the change. So yeah, I suppose it's, what's the balance? How do you kind of achieve that you're not kind of gone so far the automated testing, and what are the arguments for automated testing in those regards?
Yeah, I think that may be some sort of implicit assumption, especially from, I think, the software industry, where because it's so easy to build things, we are not used to having these processes in place where quality is very important. Like, you look at the manufacturing of cars.
Yeah.
For them, quality is much more important than it is for us, even though, because obviously in their case, you're risking lives. But some of the software, the more implications it has for human beings or the economic system, whatever, the more quality goes into it and cannot be escaped.
Which I always find funny, because in the IT world, because it's like, yes, you've got this risk of life when manufacturing a car, but with IT being so unregulated, essentially, but with AI and so many things kind of coming in, that actually the things you're doing could impact the lives of people. And actually, having more focus on quality and testing is something that maybe... it's a safer way of working than suddenly being liable for something that you had no idea that your development change has made in the real world.
Yeah. And I think that there's that famous debate where real engineers say software engineers are not engineers. Yeah. Like, you don't put into your software the same amount of effort that somebody building a bridge or a building is going through.
Math,
the risks, you need to calculate everything. You have to go through several levels of quality. Everything is tested. Whereas with software, we just do it and hope for the best. And
we're the used Carmen of the of the industry. Yeah,
that is to say that maybe it's because we don't take quality as serious as other engineering specialties. So I think it's historically, we're just not thinking about it. We think about speed, trying the edge technologies, something that is new. We like to tinker with things. And when it comes to quality, even in the Salesforce world, I wonder how many people even do like test-driven development, which I think is an effort on the part of engineers to start with testing and have it already done from the beginning, instead of writing the unit test at the end, where it's really a white box. Like, you implemented it, you're testing it, you know all the workarounds and all the backdoors and everything. You know how to make it pass. Like, what's even the point?
Yeah.
Some people say, well, don't do your own unit tests, have somebody else do them, which means there's also some knowledge transfer and you cannot cheat unless you maybe you bring a box of donuts and then the other person. Well, who knows? But that's the thing. Like we try to get around and improve quality. And I think the automation just makes you stay on top of your game, because if you know you're constantly being monitored and whatever you produce is going to be tested, like it's not going to get into production ignored. If the automated testing is realizing, for example, because of your changes, the code coverage is going down, what do you do? Or because of your changes, this other code, these other flows, this thing is breaking, suddenly you're accountable. So the thing is, if you do that manually, again, you are at risk of just missing testing a specific user journey or, I think the automation allows you to scale, which I think is the main issue.
Yeah. Are you seeing in the industry more, because I'm seeing it from my side where, you know, orgs are just getting more complex, more troublesome, and actually people are thinking a lot more around actually how do we maintain the quality but still kind of keep this speed through the org. I'm just kind of interesting. Are you seeing it like your side, actually more people wanting to kind of embed testing and quality frameworks within their kind of DevOps processes or within the way they're working? Is that changing, you know?
Yeah, I think that it's still picking up. I think that's why, for example, the likes of Copado bought some testing software. And we see more Salesforce ISVs focused on testing.
Yeah.
Not as much as DevOps, it's not as big as that, but I think it's definitely something that people that have been burned with implementations are realizing, well, what's the point on just wasting millions on implementing Salesforce and not getting something in the end that we thought we were going to get? It's like, well, maybe the problem is not Salesforce. Maybe you didn't define what could look like and how do you test that quality and
where the source of truth is of what's been built. Yeah.
Yeah. And even the maintainability of all of that, I think many businesses just use consultancies to implement Salesforce or changes to their Salesforce org. But when they're gone, where's that documentation? Where are the tests? How do I know if I can make a change? Will it break what the other company built for me? Am I going to lose all that investment? Because how do you know? So unless you have tests that allow you to feel safe to make improvements to your Salesforce org, you're just in the unknown. You don't feel confident to make any change.
I think it's one of those problems, isn't it? The way the ecosystem has grown. Yeah, it's this kind of very consultant-driven implementations. I think this is where people have got to with the maturity of the orgs. You've had like all kinds of different consultancies and people working in the same thing, and you've kind of got away with it. Yeah, it's kind of small issues. Okay, resolve them. They are happening. But now it's a bit of a quagmire. You know, we change this. Things are hitting limits over here and we didn't realize. And you're kind of, it's almost not quite, but you know, that kind of code thrashing scenario where literally it's just quicker to start again than it is to actually try and fix everything. So what would your approach be then if you are in a scenario where you are doing manual testing or your quality, you know, is suffering, you're getting a lot of failed deployments or failed implementations going into production that just bugs appearing a lot more, and you know your testing is kind of manual at the moment, what are your first steps? You said like you're defining what quality is and what good looks like, but then what's the next step after that?
Well, if you've had problems already with your implementation, you can probably track back what the issue was. I've seen just many people working around the established process where it's like, well, if you want to make a change in production, it has to go through the different sandboxes. Somebody has to prove it. We need to run tests, and then we can deploy that. You don't just do changes in production.
Yeah.
So somebody may have done that without you knowing. Somebody created a validation rule, and then suddenly you want to deploy and you cannot do it anymore. So if you can prevent people from working around your process, that's one thing. Then I think one of the barriers is something that you mentioned, which is not getting, it's not bored, it's just getting angry about how much time it's consuming to just keep the quality up. And the more changes that you do, the more you have to keep track of. How are you going to define what your business should be doing, like what the system should be doing? Mm-hmm. Are you going to rely on your original user stories? If so, are you actually updating those once you finish to reflect what actually is in the system? Because from the original idea until implementation, things might have changed. Some people might say, well, why don't you use the test cases to tell you what the business is doing? It makes sense because, okay, let's not think about test cases as something I need to do to make sure things are working. It's like, this is the source of truth. The same way that you may argue, well, I don't know what the code should be doing, but if I look at my unit test, they should be telling me this is what they should be doing.
Yeah.
And if you don't update your tests, suddenly you don't know what the business should be doing, what the system should be doing. So if you're starting with manual testing because it's better than nothing, to be honest, and then it gets to a point where things break because you didn't test them, and you may be the only person who cares about it or the only person in the team that can do quality. And that's something I've seen more recently with all these layoffs. Unfortunately, I think the people working in quality are laid off because it's one of those things that they sacrifice, like, well,
yeah,
I don't think we need them, so we just lay them off. Or whoever
so it's
was
the first to go. Yeah, you're squeezed on time. What goes? Quality and testing. It's, you know, yeah.
And then you see the result that companies try to release software after laying off, and then for some reason there's more quality issues than before.
Mm.
You never know.
You're not implying something here that happened recently.
I'm not saying any names. but I wonder, obviously, I'm thinking about quality almost every day, and,
yeah.
And I wonder, well, who got laid off, and how do you fill the gap? If the person was doing manual testing and you lay that person off, that's it. No one is doing quality. If at least you have some automated testing, well, you can keep running those tests up to the point where you will need to update them eventually with all the changes coming. So the thing with Salesforce, developers are, they have to do unit testing. It's inevitable for them. They can cheat the system because the only thing that is...
No asserts, just measured. Code. Yeah. Get your code coverage and away we go. Yep.
Yeah. And code coverage is like, it doesn't really...
Yeah, it doesn't mean anything. Quality. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Ideally, it would be. And if it goes down, it's telling you something is happening. But then you rely, well, that's a problem for the developers to figure out, to make sure that they're following their own best practices. But the thing is, I think in the Salesforce ecosystem, there is less and less push to code and more to just build with flows and iterative tools. And I think the issue is, how do you test that? Because as a developer, you have unit tests.
Yeah.
And the admins don't have those tools. And it's only been recently that Salesforce added a bit of testing or declarative testing on flows. And from what I've heard, I haven't used it myself. From what I heard, it's not great. And you
the
have
starting
to
point, shall we say, yeah.
Yeah. But it opens the conversation like, well, what about all these declarative processes that we're building? How do we test them? Well, if it's flaws, you can still use unit tests, but then you need to rely on a developer.
And I think it's also, it's like the actual, if you're kind of thinking of the end-to-end testing, you could be including other systems in that as well. So actually, it's wider than Salesforce anyway, because you're wanting to test that entire process through to an invoicing system or whatever it may be. And yeah, it's more than just one piece of the puzzle, I suppose. And how do you kind of get that coverage across?
Yeah. And that's where tools that allow you to automate through the UI. Mm. So from the perspective of a user that is interacting with the application, those are the ones that can help you to test your screen flows, your different user journeys. And obviously there's a number of tools in the market that allow you to test it. There you have tools that are more generic, even open source, I think like Selenium.
Yeah,
I don't know if they're open source, but they're definitely free.
Yeah,
and those are generic. Like you can test every website. The whole idea is you locate something on the page, and then you say how you want to interact. Do you want to click it? Do you want to put a text on the input? Read the text. What do you want to do? And then you have different technologies as well. Like you have like the robot framework, which is a different way of writing your test scripts. And then you go, okay, do I need to know development? Like, do I need to be a developer to write, to automate my test cases? Hmm. In some cases, yes. Like if you're using Selenium or if you're using the robot framework, it may not look like code, but still you need to write in a
code-like way. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're writing a file. It doesn't feel intuitive, like just drag and drop, click, click, click. Mm-hmm. So you have different tools in the market and they have different approaches. As well, you have certain things with Salesforce because you may write your test script or create your test case with one of these tools and then things may change. Even Salesforce may release a change that for some reason it breaks your test case. And we've seen that as they were moving from Aura into Lineaway components, they were changing the UI. Mm-hmm. In the backend, they were changing the way they were rendering things. And depending on your locators, then they could break or still work. And then, okay, what do I do every time Salesforce releases three times a year? Like, do I need to go through all my test cases and fix them? Or does the tool allow me to work around that? Do they take care of that or not? So the effort that takes to maintain your test case is definitely something to consider.
So what else do you look for when you're kind of looking for a functional testing tool?
So I think it's how easy is it to build a test case? So what's the learning curve?
Yeah.
Is it for developers? A citizen tester, like somebody with no experience whatsoever of writing any code, start doing it?
Yeah.
Or is it for people like admins who want to just automate their manual testing and get rid of all those hours spent doing manual testing and do something else? So how easy is it to create a test case? And then how easy is it to maintain? I think those are the main pain points. Forget about exporting your test case. Like, I think once you're locked in with one tool,
that's
the pain of just moving to another one is like, I might as well not do it.
Yeah.
So okay. I think that's why it's important to choose the right one
at the beginning. Yeah.
Sometimes you don't realize those two things, how easy it is to build and to maintain until you've started using it.
Mm.
And sometimes there's not enough time during the trial period to figure out, is it something I can pick up easily? Mm. How much time is it going to take me? How do I test fictitious changes that may break it? So what I see with companies, they try to do a bit of due diligence. They compare different tools. They see
at a functional level.
Try to test and break them in a way. Like, see. Also thinking of their own people. Like, well, if we need to rely on developers, then good luck hiring them and keeping them. And then otherwise, we may have many more non-technical people who could pick this up and make automated tests much more easily.
Mm. Okay, cool. Yeah, it's been fab. I think we get anything else you want to talk about quality? What are your best resources for finding out how, if you want to learn more about unit testing, automated testing, quality?
Well, obviously there's a lot out there. Mm. I did a course on Coursera about software testing. I wouldn't recommend it because it's just too lengthy for people. Mm. But there's many groups of people. The same way we have our like Salesforce developer groups and user groups. They're much more about testing because it's everywhere. So you go to like Ministry of Testing, there are testing conferences all the time going on. There's a Test Automation University. Right. I know that Provar, we have University of Provar. So there's a lot of courses, information out there.
Okay, cool.
Salesforce, I think that they have a few trailhead modules for it. I know that the folks at Provar, we've done two modules.
Okay, cool.
Maybe going for a third.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, I'll put those in the show notes if I can dig them out. That'd be cool. Okay, so it's probably a question I ask everybody at the end, well, if I remember, at the end of the podcast. If you could wind back the clock to a point in time in the past and give yourself some advice, what would it be and when would that time be?
I think I would probably go maybe 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, since the beginning, I always wanted to work on products, build products. I've done that since I started my career in Salesforce.
Mm.
But for some reason, I was wanted to do that within the company I was at. And it never happened. Like, I didn't get the support or things like that. So a few years ago, I just thought, well, I could have just built these apps myself. So I set up my own company and I created some App Exchange apps. And I use my free time to do that.
Yeah.
And actually that's how I sort of got the job as a product manager. I switched from more technical CTO to senior product manager.
Yeah.
So I moved to product management thanks to focusing on my free time to do products and just shifting. So I think it's don't expect other people or your company to fulfill your dreams and just try and use even whatever time you have, free time after work hours, to pursue those things. And you may be able to switch careers or to get something out of it.
Yeah, definitely. Great advice. Yeah. And to me, it's been the same and a similar kind of journey, I suppose. And also just that kind of realizing that actually I could ask my boss and the company to actually work 4 days a week rather than five. And they were actually up for it. And for me, that was quite a way of actually going, well, I want to try something new, but I don't want to risk everything. I'm just going to reduce my days down and actually I can start working on something else on the side. But yeah, fab. So are these apps still on AppExchange?
Yeah, I have a couple of them out there.
Oh, cool.
Going for a third, still going through a security review.
Oh, awesome.
But yeah, it's sort of like a hobby of mine to just build interesting things in there.
So are you the product owner of Provar or one of the products within Provar?
So when I joined, Provar was the company name and the only product they had.
Was Provar.
Yeah, okay. that was it. But then a few months after, I started working on a new AppExchange product. So the main product that does the test automation is not on the AppExchange. It's a desktop app where you build it like a studio, like an IDE, and then you can run it on your laptop. You can run it on the cloud, whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
But I started working on an AppExchange product that Richard Clark had worked previously.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it was about test management, and my background is not quality at all. Like, I know about quality, but I'm not a tester. So I had to dive into what do testers do? What is the quality life cycle? How does this even work? And yeah, I've been the product manager for what used to be test manager, and then they renamed it back to problem manager. We launched it back in August last year, 2022. And it's grown massively in terms of the scope of what it does. Because, well, first is our first application on the AppExchange, but there isn't that much about quality on the AppExchange. Yeah. And there's not even a handful of applications that focus on that. So we wanted to cover all the bases. We allow people to manage their testing lifecycle. So creating a test project with test plans. Many people don't do planning at all. Like, they don't think and write things down before they implement. They just go through straight to implementation. So we're trying to train people and raise awareness. Like, first you plan, you design, then you implement.
Yeah, but we're agile. We just push it live.
I know. And the cool thing is that we wanted to make it sort of a hub to connect to all the different tools that do quality or have to do with quality. So I started, the thing is, obviously, with my developer background, it's like, well, I'm going to build this thing. I'm not just going to manage it. I'm going to build the whole thing. And in a way, because it was sort of like a side project within the company, the main product was the automation bit. They left me like free reign, like do whatever you want. So that's what I did. I started creating plugins. So like extension packages to the main core package and integrate. So you cannot do quality on its own. Like, you cannot just have test cases on its own. You relate them to user stories. Where do people have user stories? Jira. Okay, I need to connect to Jira. I need to bring those into the tool. And then Azure DevOps, people, at least our customers, use that. So those two plugins. Then quality is also part of DevOps. So the easiest thing is to integrate with the native DevOps players. And the cool thing is good timing, because Salesforce even was getting into the game. So we have a plugin for Copado, a plugin for Flossom, and a plugin for Salesforce DevOps Center. We were working with Salesforce from the beginning, since they were on a pilot, to see, okay, what are you guys doing and how can we plug into there? It's not easy, because if you're using how it is, they have a separate interface, but we just worked around it. Like, we're going to create our own app using Lightning Experience and just work that way. But that's how we connected to DevOps. And it brings something interesting to the table, because sometimes when you are deploying a number of metadata changes, you don't know what to test. Like, well, if you know the test classes that are being deployed, why do I need to tell you what unit tests to run? Well, you know, you should know, because of the code. It's the first time you don't know, but you should know. So Problem Manager automatically tells you, okay, these are the test classes you should be running, or these are the test cases you should be running, because we know the coverage of the metadata. We know what metadata you're changing. So we bring that to the table. And then finally, something that personally I feel like is ignored sometimes, or it hasn't picked up as much, as code quality. And there's maybe a handful of players that do that. So we integrated with Clayton, we integrated with Quality Clouds, with the idea of, if we want to be the central hub where people go to understand the quality of their Salesforce orgs and of their quality efforts, technical debt, code quality is part of the picture. So we should be bringing some of that data from those platforms into the hub. So in the end, we have a core package that allows you to do a lot, but then we have a lot of integrations that allow you to plug in all that information and to integrate your testing with your DevOps, bring in information from different places. And then even recently, with, you know, all the fuzz about AI and ChatGPT, and I thought of just quitting LinkedIn for a while and Twitter, because it's just these are the 10 different ways that you should do your prompts. And this is like, it's just annoying up to a point. But then I started thinking, well, what's the point of all this AI if you don't actually put it in action? Mm. So I started thinking, well, I want AI to take away the most boring things as a tester, especially if I think about citizen testers or admins that want to do testing. What are the barriers to start doing it? Mm. So sometimes it's, well, I'm looking at a user story. Give me suggestions on how to test this. Mm. So I quickly integrated with OpenAI. And he's like, okay, here's a user story. Can you give me 5 test cases?
Oh, you cool. Know, easy format, like, how good is it at coming up with the results?
Well, it is good. Yeah. But sometimes you get the results, but sometimes the answers are more clever than others.
Right,
like,
yeah.
So sometimes you're like, let's try again. And it's like, okay, I prefer these ones because obviously it's not perfect. But yeah, it generates 5 test cases. And then somebody who may not be very used to testing, it's like, well, at least it's some inspiration.
Yeah, at least somewhere to start or understand some approach. It's just, I think, it's that challenge of like, it's still cloud sourced content, right? So it's still, the maturity of what it's found and how it serves it up. But that's interesting though. I'm just thinking maybe like actually the test cases that kind of will actually be more accurate. I'm not more accurate, but give you more ideas for juniors than some other kind of types of, I want this code written like this, and it just comes out with, it's workable, but just doesn't scale, type code. But interesting.
So that's what I do. And really working on that, seeing how we can expand. And I think the main vision is to raise awareness about quality, to have a tool that anyone in the Salesforce ecosystem can say, if I get that tool, it will help me to get more serious about quality. Yeah. It will provide a sort of framework that I can follow. It will allow me to connect to the tools I already have in my tech stack and to make sure that I'm embedding quality into the other things I do.
Everything you do, And in like Provo's always been like that kind of gold standard of testing within the Salesforce ecosystem anyway. But it's a good approach, good app, I think. To really kind of glue everything together and kind of go a kind of quality first approach to everything. Cool. Well, thank you so much for being on the Salesforce Posse podcast, talking all about quality and testing. I hope you enjoyed it. It was good fun. Cool. I look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks for watching or listening to the Salesforce Posse podcast. Now, please, if you like or what you see or hear, then please rate this podcast in your podcast player, as it tells me that there are people out there that actually are listening to this and that it's useful to them. Also, it helps the podcast algorithms to kind of elevate the podcast in the different podcast directories, which will be really helpful for me as well. And finally, if you do have a question that you want to ask on the podcast, then head to salesforceposse.com/message and maybe you'll appear in the next podcast. But apart from that, thanks for listening, and until next time, ta-ta.